Tens of thousands of years ago, early Paleolithic humans painted on cave walls the things that were most important to them and with which their entire lives revolved. One of the most prominent images which have been preserved are animals that look like an enormous bull. That animal has gone extinct, but while it was alive, it played an important role in the development of humanity, and its genetic descendants still play an important role today. Learn more about the Oryx, the once and future king of cattle, on this episode of Everything Everywhere Daily. This episode is sponsored by Expedition Unknown. Did you know that there's proof that Robin Hood may have been a real person using underground passageways in England to rob the rich? Or that gold coins discovered on the beaches of Florida may be connected to a Spanish treasure fleet that sank in 1715? On the Expedition Unknown podcast from Discovery, Josh Gates travels the world to investigate history's greatest unsolved mysteries. He'll take you through Russia and Germany looking for stolen objects of great value pillaged by the Nazis during World War II, to Nepal to uncover mysterious caves high up in the mountains, or Peru to uncover the meaning behind giant geoglyphs drawn in the earth hundreds of years ago. With direct audio from the hit TV show, you'll hear Gates explore stories like the disappearance of Amelia Earhart in the South Pacific and the location of Captain Morgan's treasure in Panama. Travel the globe with Josh Gates as he investigates some of humanity's greatest feats and most iconic legends. Listen to Expedition Unknown wherever you get your podcasts. This episode is sponsored by ButcherBox. If you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know I like to share some of the creations I've made with my ButcherBox shipments. Today, I want to tell you about my latest creation, meat muffins. I take a package of ButcherBox ground beef and mix it with shredded cheese. I then put it in a cupcake tin, filling it about 3/4 of the way full. And then on top, I'll pour a scrambled egg mix. I put it in my air fryer for about 13 minutes at 390 degrees, and the result is ground beef muffins. Quick and easy to make, and you can put them in the fridge for later. And if you'd like to try this recipe out yourself, you are in luck. Because today, ButcherBox is giving my listeners free ground beef for the life of your membership, plus an additional $20 off your first order. Use my link, butcherbox.com/everywhere, and use code everywhere to get free ground beef for life, plus $20 off your first box. That's butcherbox.com/everywhere, code everywhere. The aurochs were basically an ancient species of giant cattle. They weren't as big as an elephant, but definitely bigger than modern cattle. The aurochs existed alongside humans for most of humanity's existence. The earliest evidence of humans and aurochs are auroch bones found in Israel, which have cut marks on them made by human tools. These bones date back 120,000 years. And if you go and look at some of the very earliest human artwork, you'll find images of aurochs. In fact, you'll probably find as many images of aurochs by early humans as you will of any other animal. The famous cave paintings in Chauvet and Lascaux in France both show images of aurochs on the walls. These date back as far as 36,000 years. And a recent discovery of a limestone carving in France depicts an aurochs, and that's been dated back to 38,000 years ago. The cave paintings of Altamira, Spain date back about as far and also depict aurochs as well as other large herbivores. However, the aurochs wasn't just a Paleolithic animal. Images of aurochs are found on rock art near the Nile River that date back about 15,000 to 16,000 years, and these are the oldest rock carvings that have been found in Africa. Images were also found in Egyptian tombs dating back about 3,000 to 4,000 years. Likewise, in the Indus Valley Civilization in India, official seals used to sign documents were found with images of aurochs on them. As we move closer to the present, we find yet more examples of aurochs. Julius Caesar spoke of wild aurochs in his commentaries, which were then locally known as uri, which he wrote about while he was in Gaul. He said, quote, "Those animals which are uri, they are a little below the elephant in size and of the appearance, color, and shape of a bull. Their strength and speed are extraordinary. They spare neither man nor wild beast which they have espied. These the Germans take with much pains into pits and kill them. The young men harden themselves with this exercise and practice themselves in this sort of hunting, and those who have slain the greatest number of them, having produced the horns in public, to serve as evidence, receive great praise." End quote. There were also reports of Romans capturing wild aurochs and using them in gladiatorial fights. As late as the year 1200, the German epic poem Der Nibelungenlied mentions a hero named Sigurd who kills four orcs. So, what's the deal with these animals? What were they like, and why were they so important, and where are they now? To start with, as Caesar mentioned, orcs were huge, far larger than any other breed of cattle that exists today. They were also meaner and stronger as well. But perhaps their most defining characteristic was their very large and tall set of horns. Horns that could grow as long as 80 centimeters or 31 inches. Males were larger and had a more blackish color, whereas females were smaller with a reddish-brown color. There were three subspecies of aurochs, one in Eurasia, one in India, and one in North Africa. The North African subspecies were the first to go extinct several thousand years ago. This was probably due to the Sahara grasslands becoming a desert, which I covered in a previous episode. So, what relevance did these big cows, which is basically what they were, have to humans? Before the rise of agriculture, humans were often referred to as hunter-gatherers. That term kind of implies that they were equal parts hunting and equal parts gathering. In reality, there was a lot more hunting than there was gathering, and this was the case for several reasons. First was the fact that edible plants were often only available a few weeks out of each year. Outside of that window, there weren't many options. And the second was just a matter of physics. Hunting very large animals was often the most efficient way to get calories. A single large animal could be hunted in a day or less and provide enough food for a small tribe to last for a week or two. By far, the most sought-after animals to hunt were large herbivores. Almost all the cave paintings of animals are of large herbivores: deer, antelope, woolly rhinoceroses, mammoths, and of course, aurochs. Herbivores were not only easier and safer to hunt, but the meat was also much cleaner than a carnivorous animal such as a tiger or a bear. So, the reason why aurochs were appearing on cave walls and on rock carvings is that the aurochs was an incredibly vital animal to early hunting humans. However, that isn't the full story. Eventually, humans shifted from being hunter-gatherers and became more sedentary. In addition to the domestication of crops for agriculture, around the same time, people began domesticating animals. And one of the first animals which was domesticated was the aurochs. The aurochs were believed to have been domesticated in two different locations independently around 10 to 11,000 years ago. One of the domestication events occurred in the Indus Valley. This occurred with the Indus subspecies which existed in that region. The other domestication event occurred in what is today northern Iran or southeastern Turkey. This domestication was of the Eurasian aurochs. These first domesticated aurochs may have been quasi-hunted animals where they were kept in a limited area but then hunted like wild aurochs. But over a period of about 2,000 years, the bones of these domesticated aurochs became smaller, and they slowly became the domesticated species of cattle that we know today. And yes, almost all cattle breeds today are offshoots and descendants of domesticated aurochs thousands of years ago. As domesticated cattle breeds developed, plenty of wild aurochs were still roaming around. Many of them ended up breeding with domesticated cattle, causing insertions of wild aurochs genetics into domesticated populations over the course of thousands of years. The new domesticated cattle breeds were smaller and much more docile than the wild aurochs. Over in India, their domesticated aurochs became what are known as zebu, or humped cattle. These are the traditional Indian cows that you might have seen images of or seen in person if you had the opportunity to go to India. These zebu cattle eventually spread to places like East Africa and Brazil, as they are better suited to the climates due to their high tolerance for heat. Over time, both the Indian and Eurasian wild aurochs numbers began dwindling. They suffered from several of the same problems, including a loss of habitat due to expansions of agriculture and farmland, overhunting with improved weapons and techniques, and finally, interbreeding with domestic cattle, causing a loss of genetics. As I mentioned earlier, the North African aurochs probably died about 5,000 years ago, although it's possible that some could have survived into the Roman Empire. The last Indian aurochs probably died around the year 1200 in what is today West Bengal. The very last aurochs died in 1627 in the Yaktora Forest of Poland. It was a solitary female who died of natural causes. The aurochs were one of the first animals which had any hunting ban placed upon them due to their endangered status. However, by the time it was enacted, it was too late. If you remember back to my episode on the woolly mammoth, scientists have been working on trying to bring the woolly mammoth back to life now that they have a complete genetic sequence of the animal. And it probably wouldn't surprise you to learn that the same thing is being done with the aurochs. The process of bringing back the aurochs, however, will be very different than trying to bring back the woolly mammoth. The closest relative to the woolly mammoth is the Asian elephant, which split apart from the mammoth over a million years ago, and there are no descendants of the mammoth alive today. However, the oryx genetics are scattered across the many different breeds of cattle that have developed over the millennia. Instead of trying to manipulate oryx DNA, the plan is just to crossbreed something that will be the approximate size and appearance of the extinct oryx. This was first attempted 100 years ago by two German zoologist brothers by the name of Heinz and Lutz Heck. They took Spanish fighting bulls and other heritage breeds to create what became known as Heck cattle. Since then, other projects have started, including the Polish Foundation for Recreating the Oryx and the Taurus Project in the Netherlands, which are working on bringing back something as close as possible to the oryx. And they're actually making progress, and they've created cattle that do bear a resemblance to the oryx, but still aren't quite the same size. The breeders are confident that there will be an oryx-equivalent type of animal roaming free in Europe within a few years. The oryx have been one of the most important animals over the entire course of humanity. They provided a vital food source for hundreds of thousands of years, and they now serve as the basis for all domesticated cattle in the world today. One day, in the not-too-distant future, we might be able to watch them, or something like them, grazing and roaming across the open plains once again. Everything Everywhere Daily is an Airwave Media podcast. The executive producer is Darcy Adams. The associate producers are Thor Thompson and Peter Bennett. Today's review comes from listener Boo Earns over at Apple Podcasts in Canada. They write, "And I'm done. Until tomorrow." Well, Gary, I finally joined the club. I have finished the entire catalog of shows working in reverse. Am I to assume that the membership card and keys to the clubhouse are in the mail? The way you take small little topics that I may never have given a second thought to in my everyday life and condense them into bite-sized morsels for my brain to digest makes the long days of driving, I'm a truck driver, a little less mind-numbing. Also, as a Newfoundlander, I am also thrilled to hear you pronounce my home province correctly. Have you ever been? If not, I highly recommend it, as there are plenty of interesting facts and history that I think would make a great topic for the show, like the tradition of getting screeched, or the Beothuk Indians that used to inhabit the province before the Europeans. I love what you're doing, and thanks for keeping me entertained on my long days and even later nights behind the wheel. Well, thank you, Boo Earns. I have most definitely been to your fine province, several times, in fact. I have stood at the easternmost point of North America at Cape Spear, and I have traveled to the top of the island, to the very first European settlement in the Americas at Léon-Saint-Meadow. I've been to Gros Morne National Park, I've stayed in Gander, and I even got up to the forgotten half of your province in Labrador, where I visited Red Bay, Battle Harbor, Nain, Goose Bay, and Torngat Mountains National Park. I even watched a live performance of Come From Away on Broadway with representatives of the Provincial Tourism Board. And as for the pronunciation, I just remember the rhyme that was told to me on the ferry as I came over from Nova Scotia. Understand Newfoundland. You should receive your keys to the Completionist Club shortly. You will be happy to know that every Friday at the Canadian Clubhouse, we serve cod cheeks. Remember, if you leave a review or send me a boostagram, you too can have it read on the show.